Welcome to PharmaDocs with your host, myself, Dr. Jay Resnick, and Dr. John Robertson. Practicing oral surgeons bringing you the latest and greatest in pharmacology as it affects you in your daily dental practice.
Hey, Jay. Hey, John. How are you?
Jay, good evening.
Good. How are no you technical doing? Problems this week.
None.
Yeah. We're doing well.
That's exactly right. And so as soon as I say that, watch me lose internet or something like that.
Yeah, really. Good. How you been?
I'm great, man. It's just good. So exciting to be here again. I tell you, I look forward to this, Jay, every 2 weeks. And and our audience base is just continued to grow and grow, as I like to refer to it as Pharma Nation.
Yeah. And I think we're both learning a lot too, because it's making us keep up on all these drugs.
Exactly. I was about to say the same thing. It has definitely made me a better practitioner.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it's interesting. We'll have our talks, get in depth on the show, and then I go into the office the next day. And there's that patient on that drug.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's your practice is probably like mine. I get all the patients with a laundry list of medical problems and a laundry list of drugs, and we've got to manage them in the office safely, and know what medicines they're on and how they may impact my treatment. Know if any of the medications I'm going to give them could possibly interact with them, and so this is all. Even though you think of, well, you know, why do I need to know about a drug for treating MS, like we talked about last week. Well, that drug can impact, have some effects on what you're doing. So you got to know.
And Jay, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I want the Pharma Nation to understand we're bringing up all these new drugs because it's not just going to be our patients, Jay. It's going to be our loved ones, our family members that may wind up being on one of these drugs.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll be educated about it.
Correct. Yeah. Because you might be able to say, mom and dad, okay, I know you just got put on one of these drugs. And I remember these guys talking about you have an increased risk for blood clots.
Yeah.
Or an increased risk for a myocardial infarction.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to talk to your physician about this. Is this something we should stay on? But like just earlier this week, I had a patient that suffers from chronic seizures and the multiple medications he's on just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Well, the mother showed me their rescue. Well, she called it rescue spray. It's Nasalam, which we talked about before. It comes in that little nasal spray device. It's midazolam.
Okay.
And it's used for the medical emergency seizure. Okay.
Oh, nice.
So I talk about this in my lectures when I get in there about medical emergencies and we get to the seizures, you know, because they used to have that little MAD, mucosal atomizing device.
Yeah.
That you could just put a syringe and squirt into the nostril.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, think about all of the different naloxone devices that are now like that.
Yeah, I think they're developing, or they have nasal administration.
You're right. The intranasal spray is the way of the future, because guess what? If you're not going to be able to start an IV, it's right there. Boom.
Yeah.
Done.
I mean, same for the COVID vaccine. They're trying to develop an intranasal COVID vaccine.
So, okay. Hey, man.
Nobody likes shots.
No. All right. So let's get on with the show, man.
Or as they say in the news, jabs.
Yeah, that's the.
I hate when they use that term. I don't like jabs. Yeah,
no, nobody wants a.
Nobody wants a jab, even if it's something good.
Nobody wants a jab.
All right.
Nobody wants to be mandated for their jab.
No. You know? All right. So let's go on to our first drug for tonight, and that is
Cibinqo. That's right.
And that's abrocitinib, and this is a drug that just came on the market for treating atopic dermatitis. And it's in a category of Janus kinase inhibitors. Does that sound familiar? For those of you who've been with us a few weeks, you'll notice that we have talked about Janus kinase inhibitors in the past. And this is another new one. So Janus kinase is a tyrosine kinase. And what it does is it basically binds cytokines and basically makes them function to cause white blood cells to proliferate, to differentiate, also causes inflammation. And so Janus kinase is involved in signaling in the immune pathways of the cytokine. So by using a JAK inhibitor, you are blocking that signal. You're disrupting the cytokine and growth factor signaling pathways so that it reduces inflammation. And that's basically what's going on in atopic dermatitis. It's a almost like an autoimmune dermatitis. And your own body is producing too much of this Janus kinase and causing too much, you know, you have too much inflammation, redness of the skin, flakiness. And, you know, for those of you who remember from last week or last time we talked about atopic dermatitis, it's something that can lead to, especially in kids, to food allergies. It's a big harbinger of food allergies and also developing asthma and allergic rhinitis in patients. So it's part of that atopic triad. And so all these things are, you know, are related. It's the more we learn, the more we need to learn. And
so Jay, the thing about it, we as a dental healthcare professional might think, it's just atopic dermatitis. What does it matter to me?
Yeah, just put some cortisone cream on it, right?
Yeah, it does matter. And Jay used an acronym earlier that everybody needs to be aware of, because underneath your medication list that your patient fills out, they may just put JAK. Mm-hmm. And you may just blow that off.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a Janus kinase 1 inhibitor.
Right.
And you can't, because this patient has been immunocompromised due to this medication.
Yeah, this is suppressing their immune system. And it sets them up for really a lot of opportunistic infections, like viral infections, fungal infections.
People have died from that.
Yeah. And in fact, it increases, you know, for those of us who are over 50, if you have atopic dermatitis and you're placed on one of these JAK inhibitors, it can increase your risk of developing shingles, reactivating your old chicken pox from when you were young. And so that's a big concern. And so you got to know the side effects of these medications. But as far as dental practice goes, they are immune suppressants. Even though you think it's just for a benign skin condition, that's just eczema. This is really a lot more. It goes much deeper than that.
Well, and you just said for over the age of 50, also the increased risk of death.
Yeah. And who wants that?
If you have some of the risk factors in cardiovascular disease and you're placed on these drugs, that factor is bumped up.
Yeah.
Same thing about blood clots,
especially if you're a smoker.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Especially smokers,
a smoker or a current smoker, or if you've had an MI, if you've had a stroke, or if you've had blood clots in the past, and the blood clots would include a DVT or a PE.
Right.
All right. So if you're placed on any of these JAK inhibitors and you've got these predisposing risk factors, you have an increased risk of all of this happening to you.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, you have an increased cancer risk with these JAK inhibitors for lymphomas, skin cancers, and again, in smokers, increased risk of lung cancer and increased risk of cytopenia, where you have fewer decreased lymphocytes, neutrophils, red blood cells, platelets, all related to the JAK inhibitor. And How often do you have a patient who you prescribe antibiotics to that you're doing a procedure on, and they say, "Oh, I get yeast infections all the time. Can you give me some Diflucan?" Right? That I get those at least a couple times a month.
Yes.
Right? Don't you?
Yes.
Well, Diflucan, which is fluconazole, actually increases the JAK level, level of Janus kinase in the blood, and so. By inhibiting its metabolism. And so it leads to more inflammatory conditions. It'll make their atopic dermatitis worse if you give them that drug. Now, usually, I mean, for a single dose, I wouldn't expect too much, but if they're on it for a longer time, let's say 1 or 2 weeks, you might start seeing, even though they're on a Janus kinase inhibitor, you might see their dermatitis getting worse.
And Jay, I can see the scenario right now. You're busy at your office. That patient calls your office and says, hey, I think I've got a yeast infection. And then they run back and say, hey, Dr. Resnick, so-and-so's got a yeast infection. Okay, if I call in some Diflucan? Sure.
Yeah.
And they might be on a JAK inhibitor.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now, I mean, it's like we finally switched over to total EMR.
Yes.
Which, you know, is a major pain in the butt. But but now, you know, if I'm at home, if I'm at the office, no matter where I am, I can pull up that patient's medical history really quickly.
Yes.
And see what medicines they're on, see what health issues they have, rather than waiting for my staff to go and get the chart for me.
Right.
So I think, you know, as much as sometimes this technology overburdens us, it definitely has its good points. And this would be one of them, being able to really efficiently get information on your patients when the situation arises, when, you know, someone calls for some Diflucan, for example.
So, and what I said earlier, Jay, about current or past smokers and all that, this is an FDA warning that just came out late last year on all these medications. And I mean, you've heard of Xeljanz.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
How about Jakafi?
We talked about that one.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we mentioned that one and Opzelura.
And Rebic. In Rebic. All right. Yep. So, and then Rinvoq. Mm-hmm. These are all JAK inhibitors, and then Olumiant. And so these are JAK inhibitors, and that the FDA came out with this warning just late last year.
I mean,
so just because it's used for a skin condition doesn't mean it doesn't carry some risk with it. And it does.
Yeah. And when 2 weeks ago, I think we talked about a topical for topical JAK inhibitor. And and so even you still get some absorption with that. You still have some of those effects that you still have. You still have to be careful when you prescribe, when you're treating your patients, and when you prescribe the medications.
Okay, look, let's move on to the next one. A good old Ryaltris, which is mometasone and olopatadine.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is used for allergic rhinitis, and it's a combination of corticosteroid and an antihistamine.
Yeah.
And it's used for SAR, seasonal allergic reaction. Again, I'm big about acronyms. So are you. We got to know what they are in case somebody writes down SAR. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, if you don't know what it is offhand, you know, you can go look it up real quickly and know, you know, these medications, you know, are available over the counter, or similar medications are available over the counter. You've got, corticosteroid spray like Nasolide, Flonase, Nasacort, and you can get antihistamine sprays. I think Astelin is one of the antihistamine sprays you can get. But this actually combines two very effective medications, and they're more potent than the over the counter, and so they're going to have more side effects, more drug interactions. And so you've got to be careful, and you may have, in addition, suppression of the immune system.
Correct.
Even though they're on a nasal steroid, you still can see, delayed healing. You can still see, higher rate of infections. And so you've got to be sure that, you are covering your patients with antibiotics if they're taking, even a nasal steroid,
So Jay, I mean, just think about the two drugs we're talking about right now. One's for a skin condition, and another is for rhinitis. But they can have significant impact on our patients and the way we treat them. Because, like what you were saying about the adrenal insufficiency,
right?
We got to make sure we cover them for any stress that we may cause during an invasive procedure.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I mean, it's just
for a nasal spray. It's no big deal. What?
Yeah. And when someone's on a long-term steroid, you run the risk of developing adrenal insufficiency, because you basically it raises the cortisone level in the blood, corticosteroid level in the blood, which suppresses ACTH, which causes the adrenal glands to produce less cortisol and other adrenocorticoids.
And then when we do that procedure, their body is unable to release that endogenous steroid that they need. So that's why we have to give them an exogenous source from the outside.
Yeah, we always supplement.
To cover it. Because if you're not, now you're looking at the potential of an adrenal crisis in your office.
Yeah.
And that's something I want everybody to know. Are you ready to treat that? Mm-hmm. Do you know how to treat an adrenal crisis? Here's one of these situations.
Or recognize adrenal insufficiency.
Right. This is where you can prevent it.
Yeah.
Cover them with the steroid.
Right. Right. Yeah.
That's how you prevent it.
Right. So, you know, if they have adrenal insufficiency and you don't cover them with steroids, they can present with fatigue, tiredness. They may be nauseated. They may be vomiting.
Hypotensive too.
And a big thing, their low blood pressure is one of the hallmarks of adrenal insufficiency.
And they can crash on you right there in your office.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. If you're not prepared.
That's right. And you know, I mean, again, look at all of the drug interactions. And it's drugs that we write, right?
Yeah.
Some of the antifungals, some of the antibiotics. And so you just have to be prepared. And also the fact that the immune system is suppressed.
Yeah.
You want to cover the antibiotics.
Yeah. And if you're unsure, you can always use the drug interaction checkers. There are so many available. There's Hippocrates, there's Medscape. I think there's a drug interaction checker. These are all apps for your phone.
Yes.
And very quickly and easily you can plug in the medications that the patient's taking, plug in what you want to give them, and see if there are any warnings. That's a really great tool.
Oh, it's a great point. It's so easy to use. Mm-hmm. And again, I can't stress enough, before you see that patient, your dental assistant should already have gone in, taken blood pressure, met the patient, came back, and then give you the list of medications. And then you can scan through everything. And if you see something that says JAK or a steroid or something, and you're unfamiliar with it, now you have the chance to find out what it is before you go in.
Yeah.
And you'll look like a shiny knight in armor.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So we basically get all the patient's demographic information, medications, medical issues, or medical problems entered up front. So before I go in and see the patient, I take a look at their medications. I take a look at their medical conditions. And if there's something I don't know or I'm not 100% sure about, I can easily look it up. And so I guess another benefit of the computer age. All right, let's move on to our next drug, and that is QUVIVIQ.
Which I love these names.
Doridorexant tablets. And this is, you know, this is really interesting. In fact, this really piqued my interest. In fact, I think I sent you the blurb we got from drugs.com saying, I think this is one we can cover. It's for treating insomnia, for treating sleep initiation and sleep maintenance. And, you know, a lot of us in dentistry are treating sleep disorders. We're treating sleep apnea.
Yes.
And patients may, in addition to having apnea, may also have trouble falling asleep. They may have trouble staying asleep. Now, this is a situation where we have to be really careful because this medication is, what it does is it's a dual orexin receptor antagonist. What orexin does is it regulates your sleep and wake cycles. And also it's involved with rewards and addiction operating on the hypothalamus. And so with a higher orexin, or normal or higher orexin concentration in the blood, this can lead to increased wakefulness during the day or at night when you try to go to sleep. It can eliminate or significantly reduce the amount of REM sleep or non-REM sleep the patient has. And so their physician may put them on this to help them fall asleep. But, you know, beware, because this is, you know, especially if you are treating sleep apnea, this will make their sleep apnea worse. Mm-hmm. And so you want to be sure that, you know, if you have a patient that comes in and they're on QUVIVIQ, that you're aware of what this is, because these are going to be sleep patients that come in to see you, and they're going to be on this medication, or they may be on this medication. It was just approved a couple of weeks ago on January 7th.
And look, they haven't even scheduled it yet, Jay. Yeah. They don't even know what.
They're not even sure where to put it.
I know. And you know, what's so cool about orexin? Okay. It's a neuropeptide that is produced in the hypothalamus. All right. Mm-hmm. Now this is mind blowing, Jay, because there's a billions of cells in our brain.
Billions and billions.
But there's only about 10 to 20,000 orexin cells.
Oh, really?
That's it.
Yeah.
And I mean, that little bit, and they've created an antagonist for that.
For that.
So it blocks the effect of the orexin, of everything you just said. So it reduces the drive to stay awake. Therefore, we go to sleep.
Exactly.
I mean, think about that for a second. 10 to 20,000 cells in our brain produce orexin, and that's it. Okay.
It's a rare commodity.
Very rare. Yeah. And this is the number three drug already produced. The first one was Belsomra. Mm-hmm. All right. And then the next one is Dayvigo. All right. Now think about that. Day, Vigo for vigorous or Vigor. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I just love these names. I mean, but I can see somebody come in the office and say, oh, I'm on Quvic, but it's Quvivic.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So yeah, patients can't always spell the name of their medications they're on correctly. But you know, since orexin also regulates reward and addictions and depression,
yes,
you got to be really careful. This, as far as prescribing this drug, if you're a physician, because it can cause decreased awareness and alertness, and your patients can fall asleep at inappropriate times during the day. In fact, they can wake up after taking it at bedtime, still very groggy in the morning, not able to drive, not able to get out of bed sometimes, and if you have a patient who has some psychological problems like depression or suicidal thoughts, this can push them over the edge. In addition, it can cause some motor problems. It can really cause sleep paralysis where you can't move or talk. And this is when you're awake. And so that's a significant problem.
And of course, drug interaction, if you do a procedure on there, you're going to probably want to stay on the NSAID side for any type of acute pain management.
Yeah, because opioids, of course, will potentiate the effect of this. And you know what's interesting is that one of the side effects is it can induce complex sleep behaviors, like sleepwalking, getting up in the middle of the night, making a meal and eating it, maybe going out for a walk, driving the car. You don't remember that you did that. So a lot of side effects from this medication. But for those people who are really suffering from insomnia, I think it's going to really help a lot of patients.
So just
be aware of it in your practice. And you, like I said, you will see it in your sleep patients.
Absolutely. Like I said, I mean, they know something is there, Jay, because this is the number three drug to be created in this class.
So sure they may come in. More.
That's right. They may just come in and use the acronym DORA, D-O-R-A, is underneath the medication.
Yeah, they might. All right. And the last drug we're going to talk about is Recorlev, which is levoketoconazole. And that should ring a bell. Ketoconazole is an antifungal.
Correct.
With the trade name Nizoral. And I know I've prescribed that for example, candidiasis, oral candidiasis that wasn't getting better just with the Micellex Trocious. Right. And so they found that in addition to being an antifungal, it also inhibits cortisol synthesis. And this levoketoconazole is twice as effective as regular ketoconazole as in the effect of inhibiting cortisol synthesis. So it's used for a disorder known as Cushing syndrome, right?
That's right.
And that's when the adrenal cortex makes too much cortisol. And cortisol, as you remember, is the stress hormone that helps your body respond to stress. And it can also, it's also involved with maintaining blood pressure and regulating your blood glucose. And it's something that's seen more commonly in women and generally in the age range of 25 to 40. And then, there, of course, there's Cushing's disease, which is where you have a benign tumor located in the pituitary that secretes too much ACTH. And so what that does is it in turn increases the cortisol level. So that's Cushing's syndrome.
So, I mean, think about it for a second. They have gone in and created a new congener of ketoconazole.
Exactly.
Levoketoconazole. And now it's treating cortisol levels. Because you know, when you hear the word ketoconazole, you're thinking, okay, it's going to be some type of antifungal. All right. But that's not the case here. And but it's got some serious side effects, Jay. Hepatotoxicity.
Yeah, that's a big one.
What's really concerning is QT prolongation. All right.
Exactly.
And that'll be for a whole show for us to talk about the drugs that cause that. But
yeah, there are a lot of them, and a lot of them are medications that we use in our practice every day. The opioids, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs,
yes,
some antibiotics. If you ever have, if you're treating chronic pain and you put the patient on gabapentin,
yes,
that can also prolong the QT interval.
Right.
And what that leads to, of course, is
torsade de pointe,
yeah, which means literally twisting of points in French.
Right.
And it's a multifocal polymorphic VTAC.
Right. And it's life threatening. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, because the QT interval length is the time required from the heart to repolarize. And that's usually on average about 450 milliseconds to 470 milliseconds. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's amazing that we have determined this QT prolongation can lead to TDP, torsade de pointes. All right.
Yeah. Generally, the ventricles take over the heart rate when that repolarization is prolonged, and you can get different foci in the ventricles that are resulting in a polymorphic ventricular tachycardia. And the danger with this is it can degenerate into V-fib.
Right.
Now, of course, is a real medical emergency.
So, Jay, the thing about, I came up with like a little cheat sheet for our listeners out there with the drugs that cause QT prolongation, and it's A, B, C, D, E, F. A is the antiarrhythmics, like amiodarone, sotalol, quinidine, procainamide. The B is antibiotics, the macrolides, E-myosin, clarithromycin. All right. And the fluoroquinolone, Cipro, and all that.
Cipro.
And these are drugs that we write.
Exactly.
Because, right? I mean, when your back is up against the wall, they're allergic to, penicillins, amoxicillin, cephalosporins, clindamycin, or even azithromycin. And, or I can't take anything in the myosin group. Then you got to start looking at something like Cipro.
Yeah.
The
exactly.
C is antipsychotics, like haloperidol and chlorpromazine. The D is antidepressants, SSRIs, TCAs. And guess what? You already said that about gabapentin. What about amitriptyline? I think about how many people write that for like TMD or MPD. All right. Then the antiemetics, ondansetron. But further research showed, Jay,
if you're doing IV sedation in your office, we use ondansetron all the time in patients who, especially redheads, because they tend to have a much higher rate of nausea and vomiting after surgery. So we use it routinely in them. But, or if a patient tells you, you're doing IV sedation on a patient and they tell you that they get, nauseated when they have sedation.
Jay, is through all of my research on this, and like I said, you said it best in the beginning, we have learned so much. The FDA talked about this. They discovered the QT prolongation on a single IV dose of 32 milligrams. All right. And we don't give that kind of dose in our office. Okay.
We give 8.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So that's the good thing about it. So we're good there. And then the F is antifungals. fluconazole, so pentamidine. So these, so A through F, these are drugs that cause QT prolongation. And like you said, I mean, you could easily call in a Diflucan or something like that and then cause an issue.
Yeah, exactly. So if you have a patient who has Cushing syndrome, I remember back to dental school, what a Cushing syndrome patient looks like, and you've probably seen some in their office. They have reddish cheeks. They have this buffalo hump, which is a deposit of fat on the back of their head. They may have abdominal stretch marks. They have a pendulous abdomen. They look very overweight, but their arms and legs are thin.
Right.
And they also bruise very easily. And I'm sure everybody has seen these patients in their office. So now more of them will be put on this levoketoconazole because it seems to be very effective. And so we got to be really careful with the A, B, C, D, E drugs that we may be giving them.
That's right. So look, man, another great show. I mean, just so much stuff out there.
Yeah, 30 minutes flew on by.
I swear. And look, Jay, it's and that's just 2 weeks of drugs. I mean, there was another new drug released today. We have to know this stuff. And
they're coming at lightning speed.
Oh yeah, and I'm happy to say that you and I are going to be making a major announcement here very soon. About a program we've been working on for a couple of years. It's not just going to be for the dentist. It's going to be for the dental healthcare professional. Yeah. It's going to be for everybody.
Yeah. Very comprehensive pharmacology curriculum.
Yes.
To bring everybody up to date so that you, you in your practice, know all these medications, know what they're used for, what they do, side effects, et cetera.
Well, so, we're going to bring you up to date and we're going to keep you up to date.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about it. And I just so excited. And our next show is going to be February 10th.
Yep. At 5 p.m. on the West Coast, 8 p.m. on the East Coast.
Yes, sir.
And we're looking forward to seeing you there.
And I would just want to thank everybody again for tuning in for us. And we appreciate you so very much. All right.
Yep. All right, have
Jay,
a good night.
Thank you.
John, have a good night.
Okay.